We have talked many times on this program about how the United States is lagging behind other nations in attracting students to the so-called STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math. The current scientific community is dismayed. Some even say they are alarmed. One who is Dr. Norman Lederman, Distinguished Professor of Mathematics and Science Education at the Illinois Institute of Technology. He is participating tomorrow at the Hancock Science Symposium at Westminster College in Fulton. I spoke with him a couple of days ago and asked, why is this country so far behind in teaching the STEM disciplines and also getting young people interested in them?
That's a complex question, and I do travel around the world, so I have firsthand knowledge of what goes on in various countries. From my point of view, our biggest problem is the support that we provide to teachers. We give them a lot of responsibilities and requirements. We come up with standards about every 10 years and give them a host of things that their students should know and be able to do. But then there's not a lot of money for professional development, either within a school district or coming down from the government to help teachers do what they're being asked to do.
But it's in the national interest, is it not?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that's bothered me for years and many others, is that, and I'm a former teacher, and I was always frustrated to be constantly told, I want you to do what you're doing, plus A, B, and C, and sometimes I didn't even know what A, B, and C was, but most often, even if I did know it, I wasn't being given support to help me do it. My colleagues and I often get asked or often have contracts with school districts where they bring us in to work with their teachers, but it's at their own expense. And the point about it being a national interest, absolutely. And we really focus on public understanding of science because after those students get out into the world, and most of them are not going to be scientists, they're constantly faced on a daily basis with social issues, personal issues that are scientifically and technology-based. Those are important decisions that they don't seem to have the background to make an informed decision about. And so we have this problem. Many countries have the problem with their general public not having a good understanding of science. Scientific literacy is everybody's main goal. Yet I just saw something 2 days ago. I was reading an article that was comparing Canada and Japan on what their students knew about science or something called nature of science. And I was wondering, why is Japan comparing themselves to Canada? But it turns out that Canada, apparently, and I'm not sure how this was measured, has a 42% understanding in their general public of science. I don't know how that was measured, but they are considered to have the highest scientific literacy of developed countries.
How does that compare? How do we compare?
I don't know how they measured it. Ours is fairly low on international comparisons, but the issue of scientific literacy, which is everybody's goal, there aren't any single measures that get it, that construct. So what you do see out there are measures of subject matter knowledge, and we do fairly low, like 34 or 35 in math and science on these international comparisons. But the other two parts, which is what my colleagues and I really focus on, is an understanding of how that knowledge was developed to begin with. And based upon how the knowledge was developed, it has certain characteristics, like that it's always subject to change. It involves human creativity. It also involves subjectivity. That fits into an idea called nature of science. And the first thing about how the knowledge is developed is called scientific inquiry, or now in our new standards, we call that science practices. And there's not much focus on either one of those when they do international comparisons or governments get concerned about what their students know. I just got back from Beijing, China, and we were working with a group that is responsible for public understanding of science. They do this through a lot of work at museums and zoos and informal locations, but they are looking at scientific literacy as just the understanding of scientific knowledge and not the other two parts, which I think is absolutely critical for the general public, because after the general public gets out of school and they're asked to make a decision, they're not going to go run out to their backyard or the garage and do an investigation to help them make a decision. What they're going to do is they supposedly will use their knowledge of science and how scientists go about their work to help them make an informed decision. And so I think those understandings about how science is done and what that means for the knowledge that's generated and how to weigh that kind of knowledge is absolutely critical if we're going to achieve scientific literacy.
You know, a lot of young people seem to be afraid of it. They'll watch on television, they'll watch some of these performers over the years who have done science programs and love it. But kids, when it comes down to science, say, oh, my God, there's too much math, or there's stuff mm-hmm. that I don't understand. You know, forget it. I'm going to go on to something else.
Yeah, most students will tell you that they think the main job of scientists is to make things as complex and as difficult as possible. They are scared of science. If there's one thing they're more scared of, it's math rather than the science. People feel more comfortable with biology because it's not as much math as in physics. It's taught in a very regimented way where there are definite right and wrong answers that involve a lot of higher-level thinking, which we do not do a good job of teaching students how to think at higher levels. We do our main job is having kids memorize things. And so it's very scary, and most people do not feel they can do well in science or math. There are gender differences there as well. Females are more mathophobic than males, and females think that science is not a domain that they should be going into. That's more of a masculine thing to do.
Yeah. So, yet there's an irony here because, you know, you put Neil deGrasse Tyson on television, and kids love him. When I was growing up, it was Mr. Wizard. He did his science program every day.
I love Mr. Wizard as well.
Well, the irony is that kids really love it when they're exposed to it in that kind of way.
Yeah, and it's related to that. I mean, it's some people would say, oh, that's just entertainment, or you know, Bill Nye the Science Guy, same thing.
Right.
But there is science in each of those shows, and there have been many shows like that over the years. But related to that, when we go to places like China and Taiwan, who both do very well on international comparisons, but we usually get brought there to work with their students on developing problem-solving skills and higher-level thinking, the kids don't even recognize that they're doing science because of the way we teach it. And we teach it more in a way like what you're talking about, where you can be entertaining in a positive way, you can be engaging in a positive way while you're teaching science.
That takes us back to the teaching part of it once
right.
again. And so the teachers have to be educated to make it more interesting in the
exactly.
classroom.
Exactly. Totally agree.
Right.
And that's where that professional development comes in. And I'm not talking about that, you know, we all have different personalities, and some people are more enthusiastic and energetic than others. But you can be engaging within that full scope of various personalities that people have. There aren't people in my mind that, oh, this person is just boring and therefore they should not teach.
Yeah.
You can engage kids by letting them experience scientific phenomena, asking them questions, be acknowledging and receptive to their ideas, and those kinds of things. But teachers need to learn how to do that because a lot of teacher education programs don't do a good job with that.
Well, from what I understand, there aren't enough teachers anyway, that there's a significant teacher gap, if you will, in these disciplines.
Yes. So what's happened, I mean, teaching is one of those professions that have a steady stream of people because no matter how bad the economy is, you're always going to need teachers. But the other side of it is, if you're good in science, if you're good in math, you can make a lot more money going into business. You have a lot more autonomy in business. You're respected more in business. And so in Chicago, for example, the teachers that remain in schools tend to be the ones that maybe you're not the best teachers because the real good ones either leave the city and go out to the suburbs or they go into industry, which happens a lot in mathematics. But in Chicago, we have a shortage of math teachers and a terrible shortage of physics teachers. Just because they're not respected, they're not supported, they can make more money elsewhere. And in Chicago is a particular instance. The district is so large and is so financially strapped that teachers have even fewer resources here than they do in the suburbs.
Let me just remind our audience that we're talking with Dr. Norman Letterman, who will be speaking at a free symposium at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, tomorrow at 10:30 at the Champ Auditorium. Well, education strategies clearly need to be changed in a couple of different ways with regard to the teachers and also with regard to the students. What would you propose in terms of getting kids at a young age interested enough to pursue it beyond the first couple of years of education?
Okay. I think it's critical that we start in kindergarten. There are some places that don't really take science seriously until middle school. Until recently, China was that way. They didn't bother teaching science until fifth grade. But kids come in at those younger ages very curious, very energetic, and we need to exploit that and build on that by getting them involved in a very hands-on, and not just hands-on, but in a minds-on way, doing things, experiencing science, and talking about science. Also, a curriculum that really is, as much as possible, aligned with things that kids experience in their everyday lives. So it doesn't seem like this foreign thing that they could care less about, that you can relate your science to things they're going to see every day or things they've heard about, things they've seen on the news. I'm a strong believer in finding out what it is that kids know about the world and giving them an experience that seems to run contrary to what they thought would happen. We often, in the profession, call that a discrepant event. So most kids come to school thinking that all gases are lighter than air and they float away, because that's what they experience and see in the real world. They all get very engaged when you show them that you can pour carbon dioxide gas out of a beaker and it goes down because it's more dense. And that really perplexes them. So it's things like that where you build on their curiosity, and you have to do it at a very young age. We tend to find that the kids have more positive attitudes about science in elementary school, and then it continually goes down from middle school into high school. It's like we're drumming the curiosity out of them. And it's because of the way we end up teaching it.
There's another irony here, though, and that is today's young people are so immersed in technology, which obviously is a result of science. You talk about hands-on. They've all got cell phones and tablets and video games and God knows what else is out there on any given day. And yet they don't take it beyond that. They just take that for granted.
Yeah, and this is another problem with the teachers. A lot of these technology devices that the kids all have, the teachers did not grow up with these things. Many teachers, you give them an iPad, they're not sure how they could use it in the classroom. And so we really stress with our pre-service teachers and the teachers we work with that the kids have these devices, these things that they're tied to, but you can integrate this into the teaching of science just like anything else. And if you can use an iPad in a classroom, not as something you just read stuff off of, not like an electronic textbook, but as something where they put on the camera, they can track the trajectory of a falling object, they can time it, they can even graph the movement of various objects. And so that's just taking advantage of the technology that exists, as opposed to not letting the kids use these things that they just don't want to let go of. But a lot of teachers out there don't feel comfortable with the technology. And so we work very hard to get our beginning teachers and the teachers that are experienced getting comfortable with technology in their teaching.
How about just telling the kids if they want a really good job when they get out of school, they should study science and get into some of these STEM jobs?
We should spend more time on careers in the STEM fields. If you ask this is a big concern here at IIT, what an engineer does, or even many teachers what an engineer does, they're at a loss for words. So we work a lot with, what is it that engineers do? And they're surprised about the things that engineers do that they're interested in. And then we have to tell them, okay, here's what you need to do if you want to become an engineer.
Well, that certainly seems to make a lot of sense. It should actually make it a little more interesting for them in terms of if they're intimidated by some of the math, for instance, some of this other approach might certainly be helpful.
Yeah, another thing that we just started with that relates to this is there are a lot of people out there that are using science and math every day in their careers, and they don't even realize it. So we've been starting to interview people in the community, anybody from a hairdresser to a tattoo artist to a pastry chef, and trying to tease out of them the science and the technology and the mathematics that they use every day. And then we're going to put this together in some form with the National Science Teachers Association that can be used to inform students of the science and the math that, and the engineering that are in their everyday lives and are involved in things that they find interesting.
Dr. Letterman, how detrimental is all of this potentially to the country?
Oh, it's monumental. When our pipeline in STEM fields decreases and we get fewer people in those areas, it hurts the economy. It hurts our competitiveness worldwide economically. And we're seeing that right now where we used to produce a lot of things. Now we're importing a lot of things that are made by other people. Down the road, I mean, we've recognized this historically over the years, and some of the biggest changes in the science and math curriculum were when Sputnik was launched by the Soviet Union, and we suddenly realized that we weren't as advanced technology-wise, as scientifically-wise as we thought, and a whole lot of money by the government was put into the schools to create more scientists, to create more public support of science, and so that everybody recognizes the detriment, and it's a thing to start realizing that this is a systemic problem. We're all in this together. It's not just the teachers. It's not just the school or the school district, but it's each and every one of our communities and, of course, our government. We all have the same problem.
We seem to be relying to a very large degree these days on foreign talent, bringing in people from other countries.
Yep.
And, you know, I wonder how long we can sustain this, particularly with some of the things we're hearing about keeping certain people out of the country these days.
Yeah, and on top of that, what we're starting to notice is that especially at IIT, we have a very large international presence at the graduate level. And as these other countries are starting to build capacity in science and technology in all the STEM fields, we're getting a fewer number of people coming in. The changes in immigration laws are affecting that as well. But now countries that would, go to the United States, get a degree in an American school, they've built themselves up where they say, no, you don't need to go to the United States because we have this fine university, that fine university. So it's hurting us that way. And with our lack of general interest in the STEM field, we're falling behind. And then we're going to be forced more and more to rely on foreign talent as opposed to our own.
But that source is going to dry up too at one time, because the countries they come from are certainly going to be concerned about the so-called brain drain in their
right.
own countries, and will do all sorts of incentives to keep the folks there.
Exactly.
Yeah. One other thing I'd like to touch upon before we have to wrap this up, you mentioned earlier that young women, girls, young ladies are well behind in this and have less interest in this particular field. It's also my impression that minority groups also have very little interest. What can be done to get these groups on the bandwagon?
We have to, and I was just talking about this in a doctoral seminar last night, we have this diversity in our classrooms, kids with all different interests and backgrounds, and they've been affected by society in terms of, can you do science? Can you not do science? Can you do math? We need to make accommodations in our classroom so all students have an equitable opportunity to learn. And so it means, and this may sound a little controversial, but when you really think about it, treating every student equally is not what we should be doing. We want to optimize every student in our class. We want to optimize their learning. And means that certain students need certain accommodations. They learn in different ways. They are interested in different things. But treating everybody the same basically sets up a system where there's a narrow path to success, and anybody that doesn't fit that narrow path is going to fail. And that's what we've done with minorities. That's what we've done with underrepresented students. We've done it with females. If you go into a high school physics class, it's mainly males because the females have felt that this is not a place for them. We need to do things in our schools to attract female students to physics because we need physicists. We need people interested in physics, and we should attract males as well as females on an equal basis. But we have to realize all these students don't need the same exact thing. There are different things that turn them on and energize them.
Do you have any sense, Doctor, that that things are changing, the things we've talked about teaching the teachers to be better teachers at this, to getting young people interested at an earlier age? Anything that you see that is making a difference in this area?
I personally, what I see are pockets of success, which are usually dictated by a few very highly dedicated teachers who maybe have colleagues in that same school. But it's nothing systematic. I don't see any systemic kinds of success going on. We're still waiting to see if these next generation science standards change anything. It's got a different view of how we teach science than our previous national standards. It's got engineering in it, which was not heavily emphasized before, in an attempt to give kids a more comprehensive view of STEM fields. But I don't know if that will create any kind of systemic change. Again, with the new standards, we get called upon a lot, as well as a lot of my colleagues, to help work with teachers to let them see, okay, how does this translate into my classroom? But it came out in 2013, so it's too early to tell. And my only hope is that we don't give up after 10 years like we usually do and come up with a new set of standards.
Are you alarmed about where we are right now?
Yes. Yes, I mean it's ironic. It's what keeps me. You know, it's what keeps me going. I have such a strong commitment to teachers and kids, and what I've been doing for my whole lifetime. And when I see it not improving, and in most cases getting worse, it really bothers me, and it energizes me to look for ways to do things better. I mean, I'm part of the problem. I've been preparing teachers for a long time. I still prepare teachers. I have to be doing some different kinds of things and not the same things that I used to do. I have different people, different students. It's a different world. And so it energizes me. It motivates me. It doesn't burn me out, but it does depress me. But I use that depression about what I see as a motivation rather than as a, you know, throw up my hands and say, forget it.
Well, Dr. Norman Letterman, keep sounding the alarm. I think it's important that you do so and others do so as well. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Norman Letterman of the Illinois Institute of Technology, he's a participant in this week's Westminster College Hancock Science Symposium titled Audacious Ingenuity, Pushing the Boundaries of Science. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.